Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Network.
Marvin Williams joins us.
My Achilles had nagged me so much last year. Obviously, the docs thought with just a few weeks of rest, you know, we'll kind of go away. So I took a few weeks off, probably about 4 or 5 weeks, and tried to work out a little bit and still felt the same pain. So I went and got it looked at, and doc tells me I'll be out 4 to 6 months with the surgery.
I've heard some rumors that the timetable is better than expected.
I'm like Wolverine, baby. I always heal, you know. So I've been healing well. I've been blessed. I've been working really, really hard to kind of stay in shape. But I feel pretty good right now.
He taught me a lot about patience and the ball screen. Shot selection, different reads out of the pick and roll. He taught me a lot, really, in the 3 days I was with him. And I tried to soak it all in and apply it, you know, to my game. But, you know, the main thing, you know, he tried to tell me is that we're both small guards, you know. And when you're small, you have to be smarter than the other guys. You have to play at your own pace. You have to understand angles and spots on the court. You know, that's something that I wanted to learn in college. And just to have the opportunity to be around John Stockton, you know, a guy who I knew could teach me things like that, it's an honor.
Jeremy Evans is with us. The jumper's going. You're still jumping. Yeah. You can still jump.
All right.
In fact, what is the highest you have ever jumped?
Ever touched or ever jumped? Because I used the high jump. That was the highest was 6'11".
Okay, what about P3 touching?
12'7".
12'7"? What were you 2 years ago when you went to P3 for the first time?
12'4". Man.
First and foremost, I'm here to win and to be a part of something I feel like is going to be great. And also to help Trey along the way. He's, you know, that kid right there, he's very poised for a rookie. He knows how to play the game, so it makes it easier for me. It's just
but he has no idea.
Not yet. Not yet. He doesn't, but you know what? He listens. You actually see him going out working exactly of what you said, so wants to get better.
Brandon Rush, what is your timetable here?
I really don't have no timetable. I've been cleared. I'm just going to take everything real easy. Try to get my timing back. Be ready for regular season. Be able to play in a regular season game.
And as Canner joins us now, he doesn't want to put the headset on, though, because it might mess up his hair so he can look pretty for all the pictures.
You know, fans love my fashion, so.
Right. We've seen your fashion. I don't even want to know where you went shopping this summer.
I don't want to tell you.
You ready to go?
I'm ready to go, man. You know, I cannot wait to go. I've been sitting for, like, what, 6 months now? Yeah, I just cannot wait to go. I'm so excited.
You know, Dave and I talked about this when we were in Vegas together. You know, both of us are going to have to step up and take on more of a leadership role, and I think we're ready to do that.
Like Gordon said, man, we're ready. You know, we've been working hard all summer, and, you know, we've both been waiting for this opportunity, and, you know, we're ready.
Welcome back indeed. The Energy Solutions Arena is popping. It is hopping. It is bumping. It is, well, we'll stop it right there. The Jazz are less than an hour away from their scrimmage here to wrap up training camp. They will have a practice or two on Monday, I believe, before the first preseason game on Tuesday night against the Golden State Warriors. But 54 minutes and counting from now, the Jazz are going to tip off the 2013-14 season against each other. Welcome in. It is the Salt City Hoops Saturday Show. I am Austin Horton, your host, alongside Andy B. Larson, managing editor of saltcityhoops.com. And to my right, El Fuego, Dan Clayton, the Spanish voice of the Utah Jazz on 1600 AM. How are you guys doing?
I'm like Wolverine, baby.
You just keep coming back, keep healing. What did Cantor say?
Cantor's line.
Fans love my fashion.
Yeah, you know, fans love my fashion.
Fans love my fashion.
So those two lines are pretty much going to be part of my daily vernacular now.
I think that makes sense.
I'll be using
you look good in your sweater.
You know, fans love my fashion.
Well, you're like Wolverine, baby. You know who is like Wolverine? Our producer, the stalwart, McGregor Zone on Twitter, Patrick Bowman behind the glass. So let's get it going. Give us a call, 855-340-ZONE, 855-340-9663. You can text the program, 64636, keyword ZONE, and then your message. Find us on Twitter as well. there's a lot to talk to before the scrimmage gets going. We're excited, aren't we? You guys went in and saw the video boards before the show. What'd you think of
that? Yeah, they're pretty cool. So they did a media pre-show at 2 o'clock today and just kind of showed off the capabilities. Kind of gave us a little 30-second highlight video teaser. And, man, I mean, replays are going to be special this year. And it's just – it brings a whole new level to the whole fan experience. It's cool. I mean, like Dan was saying, I'm not one of those guys who wants to spend the whole time watching the video screens, but it's when I do, you know, if there's a replay or a questionable foul call maybe, I'm going to be thanking my lucky stars that we have those video boards. They're pretty neat.
Do you ever go to a concert and you get stuck behind that guy who's going to watch the entire concert through his phone screen?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, you know, we pay all this money to come sit in the arena and enjoy the experience and watch, like, real human basketball players in battle, gladiator style. I think eventually we should, you know, look at the floor, and or occasionally we should look at the floor. But they really are something.
It is. They're phenomenal.
And they told us that the fans that come to the scrimmage, hopefully some of you are on your way to the arena as we speak. They said that the fans at the scrimmage today will get sort of a partial view. They said it's still a work in progress, so that they hope to have it fully functional by October 30th,
sure.
the home opener of the regular season. But fans will get a taste today of that video board.
Replays and all those and that sort of more like live action probably.
Yeah, they'll be doing the live action today. And then, you know, they're still working on the overlays and and the player packages and that sort of thing. So we'll see those all rolled out, especially on opening day of the regular season, October 30th.
Well, the scrimmage is open to the public. It is free. It starts at 4, so it's after conference. You can convince your wife to let you come down here if that's an issue at home for you.
After what?
after the Mormon camp out there.
Yeah.
It's like
3
blocks that way.
I know it made parking kind of difficult today, but
but you can come in and it's free. You can come in and see those video screens, see the new look team. Speaking of the new look team, you heard the montage coming in from Media Day. Brandon Rush, Richard Jefferson, Andres Biedrins. You've got Trey Burke. You've got who else? John Lucas III.
Yeah, you got Ian Clark.
Wolverine.
Yeah, that's his new nickname, isn't it?
I like
Marvin
it.
Wolverine
I love
Williams.
Thanks,
David. Check it out. A little cameo
a drop
by David Locke.
David Locke, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. Never one to disappoint, never one to not bring drama with him. He's got his intern camp back here before they go out and get to work.
Certainly never one to run the opposite direction of a microphone. If he sees a hot microphone, he's coming that way. So
he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. So let's get right into it. I want to talk about a little bit what Zach Lowe, who I think is just far and beyond the very best there is to cover the NBA right now.
I think he's the best sports writer right now. I mean, I don't know that I want to have this conversation, but I think he's number one in sports writers right now of anyone out there for any sport.
He does his homework. He always includes still shots to back up his work of actual game footage. And he gave a little breakdown of what he wants to see out of Derek Favors this year for the Jazz. We've heard all the talk leading up to this. Favors, it's time for him to step up and be a leader alongside Gordon Hayward. Greg Anthony of NBA TV tweeted out his top 3 picks for maybe being the most improved players this year. Favors was included on there next to one Andrea Bargnani and Earl Clark. But what do you get? You guys saw the piece from Zach Lowe, I assume. What stood out to you from that?
I think what he added to that, to my understanding of Derek Favors' game, is that the reason that he's struggling on offense is that he tries to do the wrong thing with the ball a lot of times. So Zach talked a lot about how when he comes off the pick and roll and gets that drop pass off of that roll, he ends up running into a defender in the paint. And because he doesn't really have that ability to pass on the move yet to an open three-point shooter or someone else cutting down the lane, he ends up either forcing a shot and kind of keep going and maybe get a charge or end up taking a hard layup, or he takes that little 15-foot jump shot, which is hard to do in kind of a pull-up situation. He's not a great jump shooter to begin with, but then when you try to make it off the roll, it's not actually an easy shot for him to make. And as Zach points out, they kind of look like easy shots, right? They're kind of open 15-foot jumpers, but the truth of the matter is that in NBA circles, even the best players only make those about 40% of the time.
The list is called the 10 most intriguing players for this season to watch. It includes guys like Jeff Green, Eric Bledsoe, Evan Turner, the unibrow of all unibrows up there, that guy that plays for the Pelicans now.
Anthony Davis. Who I think looks like Sam the Eagle from the Muppets just a little bit. But anyway, he included a still shot of Favors shooting off the pick and roll down on the right side of the block. And that is something that Favors, we all know what he can do on defense. There's been comparisons drawn to a prototypical, in fact, I think he mentions it in here, a prototypical young Tyson Chandler as far as defensive play goes. But if he's going to take that next step, it's obvious, it's blatantly obvious, that he's got to have some form of offensive game, some form of go-to move, and that's what he's been working on with Karl Malone this season, this summer.
Yeah, and specifically I think what Zach talks about in the piece is that sometimes he struggles to know what to do when that third defender appears. So you get loose on the pick and roll because your guy stays up top with the high pick. So you slip it or you roll, and now you're alone and help comes across the paint, and sometimes Favors doesn't know what to do there. I'm hoping that when Favors says, and you know, both he and Malone have been a little close to the chest in terms of describing what happens in these workout sessions, but I'm hoping that when Favors says that Malone's been helping him with the mental aspect of the game, that's what he's talking about. Because again, and I know we've debated this on Saturday shows before, you know, if all he meant is how to stand in front of the mirror and psych yourself up, I think that might be an overvalued.
I see power.
Exactly. Because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. That was an old reference. Sorry. 90s Saturday.
People,
90s Saturday
my
Night Live.
I was thinking
fans
of,
like my fashion.
I was thinking of Cool Runnings where they're standing in front of the mirror. You know, he's telling
you. Yeah, right. I'm like Wolverine, baby. No, so like when he says, Carl's been helping me understand the mental aspect of the game, I hope that he doesn't just mean like, you know, positive affirmations or whatever.
Right.
I hope that what he's helping him with is recognizing situations, because I think that's where Favors needs to get better.
And that's something that Malone really improved at through the course of his career by a ton, right? I mean, by the end of his career, he absolutely knew what to do in every situation, whether that be the over-the-shoulder pass to a cutter. You know, he had an awareness of what was going on the floor around him at all times by the end.
Yeah.
That hopefully he can kind of, I don't know, that he can transfer it over to Derek, but give him some pointers as to where and what to look for.
You heard Derek Favors on Media Day telling David Locke that right here on your home of the Jazz, the Zone Sports Network, that he's kind of working on a similar move to what Al Jefferson, what David has termed the wheezy, that little short pullback hand turnaround hook shot, I guess you could call it. I don't know what it is. It was ugly, but he was incredibly effective with it. And Favors said he's kind of tried to put that into his arsenal. Is that something that you think it's just kind of like if you get a couple layups and you get things to get rolling, you can then build off that? Because that doesn't really seem like a go-to move to me.
Well, it doesn't bother me. I guess the big thing is, I wouldn't want a potentially physically dominating, well, that was a lot of adverbs, NBA big man to necessarily fashion every aspect of their game around Al Jefferson, because Al's whole game was predicated around how do I avoid contact? How do I avoid running into another body? Right. As such, every shot he ever finished, his momentum was going away from the basket. He very rarely climbed up the chest of the defender. As a result, his free throw rate was really low, and that hurt his overall offensive efficiency. In fact, the fact that Al was as efficient offensively as he was, despite never going to the free throw line, it makes him almost even more remarkable as a low post scorer. So I'm not sure that part of his game is something I want Derek taking. I think Derek needs to be a guy who, because of his size, strength, and athleticism, Derek needs to have two or three bodies bouncing off him every time he goes to the rim.
You hear that he worked all summer with Karl Malone, another guy, Trey Burke, worked 3 days with another guy who's got a statue out here on the plaza, John Stockton.
And Andy Larson?
Yeah, not yet. There are rumors, though. I don't
Soon,
know.
One day.
He'll have to have an RSL jersey on, though.
Right, that's true.
But do you want to talk about the America Cup? Is it the America
what?
Cup? The
no,
U.S. Open
that's
Cup?
That's like
whatever
the sailing thing. No, I don't want to talk about the U.S. Open Cup.
Yeah,
okay.
that was a rough
Anyway,
one.
But
that was as rough as Utah-UCLA fourth quarter.
Boom, roasted.
Ouch.
So, but he was working with John Stockton up there in Spokane on the pick and roll. Favors is working on the pick and roll with Karl Malone, yet no one's talking about the most dynamic duo of pick and rolls maybe in the history of the game, working with these guys separately, telling them, here's what you need to do. Here's what you can do to become more like we were.
And I think that's really powerful. I mean, the other thing that we want to mention on Favors' role game, and especially I think having a capable point guard on the pick and roll like Trey Burke was like last year in college, and we'll see if that translates to the NBA level. But if he turns out to be an NBA elite pick and roll guard, that third defender that you were talking about, Dan, is going to take a step or two towards the point guard role side rather than the Derek Favors role side. And that might give him the space he needs to do some of those athletic finishes. To your point, Austin, I think his meeting with John Stockton, I think he learned a lot. I mean, David Locke asked that question about, you know, in the first game of the season, you're doing a pick and roll with Derek Favors and Russell Westbrook, although it won't be Russell Westbrook now, but whoever the backup point guard is going to be going underneath that screen. What do you do now? And he says before he met with John Stockton, he would have taken that jump shot, just that 20-footer or 3-point pull-up jumper to take advantage of that space. But now he learned from John Stockton to make that rescreen, which is such a I think it's a more powerful technique. I mean, we've seen Tony Parker and the Spurs use that over and over again to remarkable offensive efficiency. You can see that they're actually learning important ways to play the game from Stockton and Malone, and that can only be a good thing.
Well, and Stockton really preached patience to him, kind of said the first part of the game you shouldn't be putting up a lot of shots because it's going to hurt your percentage. It's going to, you know, you miss a couple and now you're starting from behind. At the start of the game, get other guys involved, and I think that's fantastic advice, because I think the best thing Trey can do, you know, Locke, who just came in here and
yelled.
Yell bombed our broadcast, Locke has made a lot of great points about how young rookie point guards you know, usually don't make a huge impact in their first year in terms of their own offensive game, their own shooting percentages, for example, offensive efficiency. So probably the best way for Trey Burke to be elite now is if he's an elite passer. Now, I don't know, given that they've said the ball's going to be in Gordon's hands a little bit more, I don't know that he'll have the ball enough to get up into that elite territory where, like, only 9 rookies in history have amassed 600 assists or more. But if Trey Burke gets 400, 500 assists his rookie season, then he's on his way to being an elite distributor in the league.
Yeah, and I think that's big. One of the quotes from Trey Burke's interview that we didn't get in that first package was that he felt like he was a better – what did he say? See, now I'm blanking. I think he felt that he was a better pick-and-roll guard than
he showed last year?
Than he showed in summer league.
Oh, okay. I would hope so.
Right. Well, okay, that's fair. And I think Jazz fans can hope to see more of that in the future.
Well, a poor workman blames his tools, so Trey would never say what I'm about to say, but he was also running the pick-and-roll in summer league with Deontay Christmas, and what I mean? Like, being a great pick-and-roll point guard is a lot easier when Derek Favors is your finish man, right? I think anyone that's putting too much stock into Trey Burke's summer league, they'll probably see something else starting this Tuesday, maybe even starting in 41 minutes, because I think we'll get to see a little bit out of him at the public scrimmage. But, you know, starting on Tuesday, we're gonna realize that putting real NBA talent around Trey Burke is going to make him look a lot better right off the bat.
It's true. And honestly, one of the reasons I'm excited for today's scrimmage is this is actually the first time that these players have scrimmaged for more than 5 minutes during any given practice.
Really?
That's something that basically they don't have time to do any.
They've been running that little 5-on-5.
Yeah, because, so they've had, 6 practices so far total, because, you know, they've only been practicing for the last 3 days for 2-a-days. And then they missed the afternoon session for the Utah game on Thursday. So it's either 6 or 7 total practices, only 2 hours each. The truth of the matter is you have to establish an NBA offense and defense in those 7 practices before this game and the game coming up on Tuesday. There just isn't that much practice time. And now you're talking about 7 veterans who left the Jazz last season and 7 or 8 new incoming guys that are coming in. They have to teach all those guys Jazz offense. There's just not that much time for scrimmage, and I think David Locke and Ben Anderson of 1320 reported that as well, that they just haven't had a chance to scrimmage until just now, or I guess in 40 minutes now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The countdown's alive here on the Saturday show.
It's interesting.
We're so excited.
It's interesting, though. I mean, even a decade ago, you'd see players come in to training camp out of shape, not ready for conditioning, and it'd take a good 2 weeks of the regular season before they were into it. You don't get that in your 5 preseason games or whatever you played back then. Now you see guys that all summer long, they have a personal dietitian, a personal chef. They have personal workouts at P3 or with Karl Malone, John Stockton. The game has evolved so much, and the players have evolved along with it in the off season, that I don't think it's that major of a deal. I think they're all in good shape. I do see the team chemistry. It's going to be a struggle. I think all season long it's going to be a chemistry issue on the court. I don't think off the court there's going to be issues, but it's just such a young combination of players with a hodgepodge of veterans that it's just going to be kind of a quasi-chemistry that they're going to have, just kind of as they all learn. I do find it fascinating, though, that the Jazz did send Trey Burke to John Stockton and Derek Favors to Karl Malone, and I think you're going to see that implemented a lot this season. I think there's going to be a lot of pick and roll for Derek Favors. Zach Lowe, which we've mentioned in his piece, said that they ran it a lot to the right side, and Favors didn't really shoot too well from the right side, but I expect that to still go mostly to the right side. He's a right-handed shooter, so you're going to go to the right side of the hoop more often than not.
The other reason is because Gordon Hayward's better on the right side of the floor too, you start him running off those wing pick and rolls off the right, then you have Favors on that side of the floor as well.
Which you say Gordon Hayward is better on the right side. It's night and day better from the left side of the floor. It's really kind of concerning that he's that bad on the left side of the floor. But
I think overall you look at his numbers and I think that he's average to below average on the left side, but really, really excellent on the right side. So I guess I don't see it as concerning given that overall he's an above average efficient level player.
But then you have Marvin, and when we talk about that third defender and the recognition that Derek Favors needs to get better at when that third defender comes, that third defender has a guy too. And more often than not, if you're running a pick and roll on the right side of the floor, this is probably like really bad radio. I'm like totally doing a play diagram, like verbally.
So you see this guy here? Yeah, he goes over to this guy here.
But hang out with me, listeners, because this is an important point. If you're doing a pick and roll on the right side of the floor, that third guy who's coming over to step in front of Derek Favors and keep him from getting to the rack, he's cheating off of a guy like Marvin Williams, who in Atlanta was an elite left corner shooter. Not elite, but I mean he was a pretty good left corner shooter, both in the corner three and the corner long too. Or maybe what starts to happen, because one thing I've noticed with Marvin Williams is in Atlanta he finished a lot more at the rim. Like he has, I mean, it's probably just that Al Jefferson effect, because Al Jefferson needed so much space, but he did not finish at the rim last year. Marvin didn't. So now other guys need to need to recognize the cracks and the seams that creates. So I was going to joke, but it's kind of serious. When we were talking about Favors going to visit Malone and Burke going to visit Stockton, I was going to say, are we sending Marv to shadow Brian Russell and Donyale Marshall and,
Yeah, Donyale Marshall. Diamond in the rough.
Gordon Hayward, go hang out
with the original Red Rocket there.
We like to fondly remember Brian Russell, but I don't know that he was actually much better of a player than Marvin Williams is.
No, and that's my point, is that he was made to look really good because he knew how to find the open spot, because Carl was getting so much attention and was pulling the defense. So now there's this wide open baseline that Marvin didn't have to work with last year. He might have that to work with this year if the Jazz run a more pick and roll oriented offense.
I saw you having an argument, a discussion on Twitter with someone about Marvin Williams. You're in love with his defense. You think he's a great defender.
I think he is. I think he has the tools and the know-how and the knowledge to be really one of the big lockdown defenders. And I think he's a guy who can go check the opposing team's best wing. And we saw it in games last season where, he's on Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant is really frustrated, and Kevin Durant's not getting the looks he wants. And then Marvin sits down, and Damari Carroll comes in. Damari, who fans love to imagine as this great defender because he was a hustle player, right? And we need to remember that hustle player and defensive stopper are two different skills. Mm-hmm. And Damari would come in, and all of a sudden Kevin Durant goes off for 12 points in 3 minutes.
I love how you put that. Fans like to imagine him as this great
defender. It's fair. So 2 years ago, he was a really terrible defender, and I think he improved last year, Damari Carroll. A little bit. I think Damari Carroll added a lot with those hustle plays, but I think he does make sense as more of a bench player, just because you're not going to get some of those hustle plays off of players who can keep control of the ball.
Well,
anyway, this is a discussion about a player who's no longer on the Jazz.
Yeah, now we're on the tangent of the tangent of the tangent. The point is, Marv can be good defensively.
And he's Wolverine, baby.
He's like
no
Wolverine.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break. Coming back, we're going to tell you who we think is going to be the most improved player on the Jazz this season. Right here on 1280 97.5, your home of the Utah Jazz, this is The Saturday Show.
Party people! Yeah! Tag team music in full effect. That's me, DC, the brain supreme. And my man, Steve Ronan. We're kicking the flow.
We're kicking the flow.
And it goes a little something like this.
It is 3:30 here on the Saturday show. Welcome back. We are 29 minutes, 40 seconds away from tip-off as the Jazz get the 13-14 season going against each other. Let's call it the Civil War, if we will.
Blue versus white.
Yeah, the scrimmage. Who are you going for, blue or white?
Blue.
I don't even know who's on which team.
Come on. Does that matter?
No, we don't know yet.
Yeah.
You cheer for players, not uniforms?
Actually, my brother used to look at these scrimmages and try to get hints of, like, who's going to start based on, like, oh, obviously the coach wants to see, you know, that player.
The white team's the starters or something like that.
Or just, like, well, if they're starting Favors and Burke, like, obviously they want Favors starting with it. You know what I mean? Stuff like that.
When in actuality, they're just going to – you think they're going to, like, play a game of lightning to figure out which team? They're going to shoot for teams, that kind of thing, which means some of the guys will be in trouble. Hopefully it's not free throws, Andres, all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Andres? It's Andre.
It's Andres.
Andres. Yeah. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
He'll be last
shoot free throws.
Okay. You can miss on his name because he'll miss on the free throw. So
that's right.
You know, it's fair.
That's right.
JK.
So we talked about Derek Favors. No, we're not. We talked about Derek Favors. Zach Lowe had a nice piece on him at Grantland, the 10 most intriguing players this year. Go ahead and check it out. On Salt City Hoops all week long, you read great stuff. Andy, you've got some good pieces up this week. Dan is a good follow as well on Twitter and gets in there on the action on Salt City Hoops. I'm kind of offended I haven't been asked to write anything yet.
Open invitation.
Please write in something. Yeah, send it in and we'll put it up.
But we want to talk about Greg Anthony sent out a tweet, Greg Anthony from NBA TV. And he was having one of those question and answer forums on the NBA TV Twitter feed. And someone asked him, who's your most improved player candidate? And he said, I'll give you three. He gave Andrea Bargnani, who of course is now a Knick, traded from the Raptors. He gave Earl Clark. I'm not sure where Earl Clark is playing this year.
I don't know why he's going to improve.
Is it Cleveland? Yeah,
well,
it's just kind of out of.
So many, like, he's got Andrew Bynum, Varejao. Like, where does he play, basically? Yeah. Anyway.
But the third guy he mentioned was Derek Favors for the Utah Jazz, which got me thinking. Derek Favors has a lot on his plate already, a lot of pressure, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But so does Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward has a lot of potential he needs to fulfill this year. It's a contract year of sorts for him. Alec Burks had a rough year last year. He could really improve. Trey Burke, he can't really go from college to the NBA, so he's kind of out of the conversation.
Cannot win most improved player as a rookie.
What if Andres Biedrin shoots 85% from the free throw line? He's the most proved player.
That's
right?
True. Yeah. Like, no, if he goes back to where he was in year three or four of his NBA career from where he came last year, I think he absolutely deserves most improved player. I mean, that's the difference between a terrible, probably non-NBA level player and a near all-star.
Okay,
that's
but if he
jump.
Shoots 85% from the line, I'm stocking up on canned goods.
I'm going to buy one of those underground caves.
Oh, that's my second really negative Biedrin's joke.
It's
in like
fine.
He
knows he can't shoot it to 15 feet. Okay, who is your most improved player candidate for the Jazz this season?
Mine is Alec Burks.
Okay.
First of all, I think just because Favors, Hayward, and Kanter showed a level of play last season that I don't know that they can grow that much from, right? They were already above average NBA players. I don't know that they're going to be all-star, you know, all-NBA kind of players that would get them that most improved player. Alec Burks, on the other hand, has a lot of room to grow. He shot only 42% last year, only had an 11.5 PER at the end of the season, and kind of struggled on defense. But what we've been hearing about him this offseason is pretty fantastic. And, of course, I don't want to go too far in the he's in the best shape of his life dialogue here. But
15 pounds of muscle.
Yep. But when Scott Stevens, one of our writers for Salt City Hoops, went down to P3 where the Jazz players have been working out all summer.
Santa Barbara.
Yes. They said Alec Burks was the big winner this offseason.
The big winner.
The big
the
winner of
ribbon.
P3, yes.
That's the official title.
So, like, when he first arrived to P3 at May 2012, after just being drafted by the Jazz, he maxed out at 11 foot, 8.5 vertical reach. And now he's all the way up to 12 feet, 2.5, so he's jumping 6 inches higher.
Wow.
He is 11 pounds more, strong, I guess, has 11 more pounds of muscle than before. The biggest thing is, I think,
I know. Do you know what 11 pounds of muscle looks like? I'm just saying.
I don't know.
Yeah, right here.
Because we could go to Fresh Market after this and like go into their meat section and we'd say, show me 11 pounds of muscle. And
well, they don't sell muscle.
Do they? Yeah.
Well, I'm just, okay,
I guess
whatever. I'll let you get back
but
to
when's
making
the last
point.
Time a player came into training camp and said, yeah, I gained 15 pounds of
no,
fat.
No, but that's what's so good is we have the data to back
Xbox
it up.
All summer.
That's what's cool about the
Andrew
PP Byam. Experience, right?
Yes, okay. Andrew Byam.
I gained 12 pounds of Krispy Kreme.
Yes, which has happened in the past for some players, Lamar Odom. I think that's why P3 is cool, right? Because we actually have statistical objective data here that allows us to back up what these players are saying about themselves. And if their staff is saying these measurables are changing, then I think we can say that they are. Now, to me, the biggest part that Alec Burks has the potential to improve on is just kind of making better decisions in the offense. And then he has to play defense, especially pick and roll defense, a lot better than he currently has. That's not the sort of thing that wins you most improved player sort of votes. But if he can raise his level of play to be one of the, I don't know, it's very possible he could be a top 15 shooting guard in the NBA this year, just because shooting guards in the NBA aren't very good right now.
Or at least aren't very efficient, that's for sure.
That's a good point.
So Andy goes with Alec Burks. Dan, who's going to be the most improved for the Jazz?
Well, I think, you know, you can talk about most improved in terms of which player is going to improve the most, or you can talk about which one's going to be a candidate for the MIP award. I think Andy is right. I think it's hard to top the Alec Burks, prognosis if you're talking about who's going to improve the most. Because now, I don't know if he'll get the MIP votes because I think people think he was better than he was last year. There were a couple things that Alec wasn't really – he was quietly kind of bad at, like, for example, defending other players or scoring the ball efficiently. So, you know, those are two kind of important basketball skills.
Defending other players as opposed to
defending himself.
Right. No, so, I mean, you know, I do think he has a lot of strides that he can make, and I think he will improve a lot. But I'm not sure that the basketball world will notice because – I think the basketball world sort of gave him the benefit of the doubt last year. The guy I think who could actually rack in the MIP votes, I'm not going to go with Derek because I think Derek also is kind of judged already by a higher bar. But if you look at Enes Kanter, who last year averaged 7 points and just over 4 rebounds, if all he does is maintain those per-minute levels and plays 36 minutes a game, he will be averaging 17 points, 10 rebounds a game. That's a jump that gets you some MIP consideration.
Oh, sure. If you're Enes Kanter, you're averaging 17 points and 10 rebounds a game. You're sixth man of the year for the Jazz.
Now, I'm not sure that he can, you know, take his minutes from, let's see, what did he play? I'm not sure you do go from 15 to 36 and maintain your permanent levels. I don't think that's realistic if you look at a lot of historic precedents. But I'm just saying that I think with pretty minimal actual improvement as a basketball player, he could have the numerical improvement that would really turn some heads nationwide.
Which is kind of a bummer that I want it to be about overall improvement, right? Like that's what I want, kind of on a per-minute level, because it's not his fault he only played 15 minutes. He had three guys ahead of him who were probably better NBA players.
Yeah.
But in the end, you're right that he will have the improved role and he doesn't have to make that big of a jump to keep it going for the 36 minutes. I think the big one is conditioning, where he was tired at the end of a lot of even his shorter stints last season.
And I agree with you. I mean, most improved players should really be about who redefined themselves and made themselves more efficient offensively or a better defender. But if we're going to do that, it can't be something we vote on. We have to re-engineer the award, and it has to be something that Kevin Pelton and John Hollinger give out, because most people are just going to go to the box score stats and make the decision there. And that's why I think Enes probably has the greatest opportunity to get himself in that conversation.
Fair enough.
Well, and that brings – I was going to say, Gordon Hayward has improved statistically almost in every category from his rookie year to the second year to last year. It's gone up and up, and he's looking to hopefully improve even more this year. Derek Favors has to improve on the offensive side of the ball, or else you don't know what he's going to be. He's just going to be a good defender. Enes Kanter, I like that idea. Enes Kanter can be a real force for the Jazz, I think, on both ends of the floor. The one thing that stood out to me last year was what Andy mentioned, the conditioning near the end. And then it wasn't really fair. He got injured and all that. But Alec Burks is another one. I'm going to throw a curveball your way, though. I'm going to say Marvin Williams.
See, I almost went with Marvin Williams, but I kind of sound like a zealous Marvin Williams fanboy lately. So I'm
glad
that's
a new Wolverine tattoo.
I'm glad
you got there.
Well, I mean, I'm like Wolverine, baby. But
Fans love my fashion.
No, now, yeah, make the case, because I agree with you, actually. I think there's something there.
Well, Marvin, hey, there's Dan Tate, We Are Jazz Nation on Twitter. Marvin last year had his worst shooting percentage year of his career in, as far as field goal percentage. Yeah. Shot 40, just over 42% on the season from the field. And when the Jazz signed, got him, I kind of had this feeling the Jazz offense will go last year as Marvin Williams' offensive game went. And why I thought that was he was going to be kind of the safety valve, the third option on the floor at the offensive end of things, and he just didn't ever show up. He never got comfortable. He said he was battling the Achilles all year long. I don't know how much that had to do with it. I don't know how much it had to do with poor point guard play, Jeffer Jazz, and shooting 42% last year. You have to think he's going to do better than that this year.
Yeah, I think the line of causation goes the Jazz offense was bad, so Marvin Williams was bad, rather than Marvin Williams caused the Jazz offense to be bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know that if he had shot the way he did in Atlanta, that the Jazz offense would have been a whole lot more.
That much different, yeah.
Different, yeah. Right? I mean, it still basically looks the same. But Dan has pointed out in several of his posts that if the Jazz offense looks different last season, with fewer Al Jefferson post-ups and more movement off the ball and that sort of thing, that's the sort of system in which Marvin Williams can really shine, and that just wasn't the case.
Yeah, the offense last year was structured in a way that took away his two big strengths. The two things that he was good at in Atlanta were, again, that left baseline shot and finishing around the rim. And not only did he have a career low in the stats you talked about, Austin, but he had a career low in both of those two areas as well. And you're talking about a guy who used to finish, you know, four or five plays a game at the rim. Last year, he got two shots off per game in the basket area. So I do think that last year's offense, the way the Jazz got their points was basically structured to kind of render Marvin Williams a little bit obsolete.
Yeah, I'd be interested in seeing how much Marvin Williams suffered from the CJ Miles issue of getting the ball late in the shot clock or as an emergency where it just kind of bounds over to him and he has to put something up. I'd be interested in seeing that. I don't think it's as bad as, you know, I'm thinking of, but it'd be interesting to see where he stood on that. So Andy, to recap, goes Alec Burks. Dan goes with Enes Kanter.
Or Enes Kanter, if you listen to Jalen Rosenthal.
Sorry. Why? Why would you do that?
Enes Kanter.
That and Manti Te'o. I don't know why that drives. It's Te'o. It's Te'o. It's not Te'o. Anyway, and I go with Marvin Williams. What say you, Patrick Bauman?
Derek Favors.
Derek Favors for most improved on the Jazz this year.
Yes.
Good choice. Derek Favors was named, as we started out telling you in this segment, by Greg Anthony as one of the three to be candidates for most improved player.
By the way,
in the
I looked
NBA
it up for you. Marvin Williams at the end of the shot clock shot 14% of his shots after 21 seconds or more, so in the last 4 seconds of the shot clock. He actually ended up shooting 45% on those shots.
Wow,
which is
really?
Not that bad.
Okay.
So
that theory was full of holes. Thank you. Fans love my
Andy
fashion.
Andy has no problem telling us when we're wrong.
You suck.
Most guys are kind of polite about it. Like, well,
you're an idiot.
I'll do it in the break.
But, you know,
for everybody to hear.
No, it's just a theory.
He was okay.
Yeah. All right, we're going to come back. Some of us are going to come back. The Jazz are tipping off in about, 16 minutes and 45 seconds.
Let's go down and shoot some hoops with them real quick before they start.
Yeah. I'm going to take Andy one-on-one down there.
Oh, let's go.
Soccer versus basketball. Let's have it. This is the Saturday show here on your home of the Jazz, 1280, 97.5 The Zone.
All right, welcome back to the Salt City Hoops Saturday Show. I'm Andy Larson, the managing editor of Salt City Hoops. I think Dan wants to introduce himself.
I'm like Wolverine, baby.
Thank you. We'll probably get tired of that by next week. We'll see.
You know, I don't know. I can beat the crap out of a joke.
Well, we're getting there.
But, you know, fans like my fashion. By the way, I'm not really this arrogant. If you're just joining us, these are quotes from our quote package at the start of the show.
Yeah, from Marvin
awesome
Williams
quotes,
and Enes Kanter,
respectively. Yes.
So, scrimmage is in 11 minutes and 8 seconds, which is ridiculously exciting. And that kind of marks the end of the offseason, right? You know, we've had the summer of Jazz, as we've been calling it on Salt City Hoops. And I wanted to kind of look at the offseason and maybe just pick out one move in particular from each of us that really changed the team in the offseason. What we'll be looking back on 5 years from now as you know what happened in the year of 2013 and in the summer of jazz. So, Dan, what do you have?
The new LED ring. Just kidding. I think without a doubt, the thing that we will look back, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, the franchise history shaping type of move is picking up Trey Burke, moving up to get Trey Burke in the draft, which we will either look back on really fondly and be like, hey, that's when we put the piece in place to to really, you know, get on the path towards contendership, or that's when, you know, we drafted a guy that maybe didn't pan out quite like we thought or became a good backup or whatever. But one way or another, the thing that probably will have the most lasting impact on this franchise that happened this offseason was the drafting of Trey Burke. For me.
Interesting. No, I think that's a good case, because if he turns out to be the player that Jazz fans and a lot of draft nicks think that he can be, he's the core piece moving forward, and you have to obviously like that 5 years from now. And I don't know that I disagree that that's the biggest move of the offseason. I guess I just want to mention, and I think it's something that people have been forgetting about recently, is that Jerry Sloan is back with the organization.
Who?
Jerry Sloan. Do you remember that name?
I'm not sure. There was some guy you were talking about, Jay Slow.
Jay Slow.
Yeah, okay.
I got that from Patrick Kinahan on this station, and I just love that nickname because the difference between Jerry Sloan, the man, and Jay Slow, the nickname, are so divergent.
Well, at least now you're pimping radio talent from this station instead of other stations, so, you know, that's good.
Yes, adding value. synergy, people. So,
are you crazy?
There's Jay Slow right there.
So, I think that's a really big move because the Jazz have a really clear path forward to be excellent defensively. And in fact, that's one of the big things that Dennis Lindsay and Ty Corbin and the staff are focusing on this training camp and preseason, is making the Jazz an elite team defensively. And you look at Derek Favors, and he can be an elite-level defensive talent. Gordon Hayward, depending on who you listen to, is either there already or has some kind of awareness sort of things to change about his game. By all accounts, Enes Kanter is good at some things and struggles at help defense. But if the Jazz are going to be an elite team, it's clear that there's a path there defensively. What Jerry Sloan was great at, on the other hand, was making offensive teams work. From that 2003-2004 team, which he somehow made an average offensive unit despite starting whoever, Arroyo, Kirilenko, Harpring, and Ostertag, and Radojevic, and Gugliotta, and whatever. Borchert, was he around? I don't know.
Borchert was around that year. I don't think he probably started. Everybody started on that team.
That's true. So that he made that like a competent offensive team, and in fact made a whole new system around that team. Makes it really clear how special an offensive coach Jerry Sloan was. He led one of the all-time best offensive systems with Stockton and Malone. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's easy to say that was because of Stockton and Malone. But then you look at what he did with the Deron Williams, Carlos Boozer Jazz, and in particular how those players have done since they left the Jerry Sloan offense. He made that team the number one offense in the league even better than the Phoenix Suns were in one season. And that's pretty remarkable. So if the Jazz can take his offensive mind and apply it to the defensive talents that this starting lineup figures to have, I think the Jazz can do surprising things this year. Now, I don't know if Jerry Sloan will have the time or the players to kind of revamp the offensive system in the way that he would. But if he does, if he gets to influence any aspect of that, I think it's good news for Jazz fans.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I do think that first they have to build that defensive foundation. I don't think we can take that for granted because, you know, to go back to the points you mentioned, I am in the latter camp with Gordon. You said that most people either think he's there or he has the tools to get there. I personally think he has the tools to get there. I don't think he's a great defender right now. I think Kanter, you know, Kanter's synergy numbers are crazy good.
Right.
But then you remember that the Jazz went out of their way pretty much to protect him from starting level competition. I mean, he played a huge percentage of his minutes against bench players. So how will he do when now he's guarding Dirk or he's guarding Dwight Howard or whomever?
It's a good point, but it's easier to imagine the Jazz being good this year defensively rather than offensively, right?
Yeah, yeah. Whoa. And now I'm going solo. Why you got to break stuff, Andy?
I didn't. Anyway, I'm holding the microphone.
Tell me that last point again, because I lost it while you started breaking the studio.
I think the Jazz are more likely to be better defensively this year than offensively, right?
Sure, but I guess I'm just saying, like, you can't say, like, hey, they've got some okay defensive players, So now they have a deep. Like, I do think they just have to go out and prove that. They have to go out and build that defensive foundation. But you're right. If you have that, and then your next step is, okay, now let's flesh out the offense, I don't think there are that many better offensive minds than Jay Slow, as it were.
Yeah, I don't think there are either. And if he can work his magic on this team, maybe not this year, but next year, I think that's what we could remember, the Jazz being a good two-way team going forward, and I think that's a big deal. All right, so we are cutting the show off because we got to go watch a scrimmage downstairs.
Heck yeah.
We're pretty excited. Thanks again for doing the producing, Patrick Bauman, behind the glass. We got Dan Clayton. Austin Horton was with us earlier as well. He had to leave. But thanks, Dan, for joining us again.
Hey, I'm like Wolverine, baby.
Always looking good, too.
Fans like my fashion.
We'll see you later on the Salt City Hoop Saturday show on 1280 97.5 The Zone.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.